This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn, and our first story today is about perceptions surrounding essential and non-essential jobs. Now, this has actually come after 1,000 Singaporeans ranked the top five essential and non-essential jobs in a survey that was commissioned by the Sunday Times. So if you were curious, here's the top five. Doctors and nurses, cleaners, garbage collectors, hawkers, and delivery men. And of course, where you have the top, you have the bottom. So the bottom five were artists, telemarketers, PR specialists, business consultants, and I'm a bit surprised by this one, HR managers. Participants were aged 16 and above, and the survey was nationally representative of age, gender, and income groups. And I think if you were to look at that top five, it's quite clear that these results are influenced by the pandemic and what we considered essential in our times of lockdown. In fact, most respondents did say that their perception of these jobs changed because of COVID-19, because I don't think anybody is surprised to see doctors and nurses being considered an essential job. But I think that for many of us, and for many, many years now, jobs such as cleaners and garbage collectors have kind of been taken for granted, even though they are so essential to helping our society run. And I think that sort of disparity is still quite clear in, outside of naming these jobs essential, the reaction to whether or not Singaporeans say they would actually want to do them. Because most of the people surveyed said they wouldn't actually take up these jobs or let their children do so. In fact, even if the salaries for those jobs were tripled, half of the Singaporeans surveyed would still refuse jobs like cleaners and construction workers, since the country is more class conscious and looks down on jobs that are traditionally done by migrant workers. And so I've been saying the word Singapore a lot because the survey was conducted in Singapore, commissioned by a Singaporean paper. But I think that they are our neighbours for, you know, you can kind of draw comparisons. We have a long history together. In some ways, our countries are more similar than they are different. And you could also say the same is true here, where a lot of people, a lot of Malaysians, avoid 3D jobs due to social stigmas, as well as the low salaries. And actually, this story first came to my attention, not because of the essential, non-essential jobs, but because artists were the first to complain about being ranked as non-essential. So they've come out to criticize the survey, saying that forms of entertainment like Netflix, Spotify, TV programs are all driven by artists. In fact, the infographic that the Sunday Times used to display these jobs, probably also created by an artist. And you could argue that these things are incredibly important to our lives, this entertainment, especially since we've been more cooped up indoors. And I think in some ways, this really speaks to our perceptions. Firstly, like we said earlier, how the perceptions have changed because of COVID-19, how without delivery people getting our groceries, getting our packages, delivering documents during the pandemic, things would just have gotten entirely stuck. How without frontline grocery workers or hawkers preparing food, you know, all these things have affected the way we rightfully should have been viewing these professions all along. But I think the flip side of that is that jobs that don't appear immediately to have tangible worth, where you cannot immediately say, well, this person exists, ergo this gets done. Jobs like artists, HR managers, these, you know, sort of vaguer jobs are therefore regarded as not as important, which is a problem because then you end up, I think, with a community or with a society that is just entirely obsessed with jobs that, you know, make money without necessarily making a lot of joy, which sounds a bit hippy-dippy, but nonetheless, I think that's true. So yes, let us know what you think. We're talking today about essential and non-essential jobs and whether or not our perceptions surrounding these jobs have changed with COVID-19. Again, according to 1,000 Singaporeans, the top five most essential jobs are doctors and nurses, cleaners, garbage collectors, hawkers, and delivery men. And the bottom five were artists, telemarketers, PR specialists, business consultants, and HR managers. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Has your mind changed about what jobs are considered essential during this time? You can let us know by calling 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be crossing over to Jason Leong, who is a comedian, who is also pretty well known for being a doctor in his previous life and therefore quite uniquely placed to talk about this very subject. That's going to be coming your way right after this. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is exactly 5:13 in the evening and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're starting things off today by looking at a survey that took place in Singapore where 1,000 Singaporeans ranked the top five essential and non-essential jobs. The essential jobs include doctors and nurses, cleaners, garbage collectors, hawkers, delivery people. And meanwhile, the most non-essential or the bottom five essential jobs, artists, telemarketers, PR specialists, business consultants, and HR managers. Some expected, some not so expected, all kind of sad that they're there, I think. But I'd just like to know whether you agree or disagree with this list. Has COVID-19 changed the way you viewed certain jobs? Call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're crossing over to Jason Leong, a comedian, also previously a doctor. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, Lynn.
So, okay. Firstly, what would you define as essential and how has that perception shifted since the pandemic, especially when it comes to jobs?
Well, I think like what you said, essential could be defined as essential now or essential in the long term. And my perception has not really shifted much. In fact, I would have to agree with almost every syllable you mentioned or that came out of your mouth in your monologue.
It's all I have, Jason.
No, really, it's enough. But I think what you say is exactly true in the sense that, you know, people deem certain jobs to be essential because of the tangible work, the work that they can have now, right now. For example, right now, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, when we see doctors on the front line, we know that the tangible work is they are preventing the spread of infections. But what they don't see is the worth of our artists' work in laying down stuff like entertainment on radio, on like you say, on Netflix. And I'm willing to wager that if we had no Netflix, no radio, no TV, no books, none of that, it would be much harder to contain a pandemic because everyone would be bored out of their minds and they would have to leave their houses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, even if you didn't have people creating pretty graphics or pretty filters for social media, which a lot of people dismiss as, I think, not that important, again, you would have people seeking entertainment elsewhere. But looking at the survey respondents and how they classified jobs like artists or business consulting and HR managers as non-essential, did this come as a surprise to you at all?
Oh, no. It definitely did not surprise me, although I will question why such a survey was needed in the first place. And like you say, although it's in Singapore, Malaysians' perceptions are exactly alike, you know. And recently I was talking to a friend of mine who is a comic book artist, and you must understand that our Asian mentality is always like, if you're an artist, if you work in the arts, you know, you probably won't make so much money or you probably are not very successful. And the thing is, I've met so many people in the arts who are not only successful, but much more financially stable than people who are in the essential line of work. For example, like doctors, lawyers, engineers, you'd be surprised. So I think this whole world of arts is vastly underrated and unexplored. And I think that's a pity because Malaysians are, we have a lot of talented Malaysians in all forms and fields of art. And I think we shortchange ourselves as a nation when we don't appreciate and uphold the Malaysian talent in our arts industry.
Yeah, but having said that, I think we come back to this issue of tangible, right? This idea of if I cannot see very clearly what you're making and how it values or how it benefits me, then I don't see it as having worth. So, you know, how would you make the case for the creative industry to be valued more highly?
Well, that's a really, really tricky question. But I would say that all of us Malaysians should really learn to support arts, especially things that come out from homegrown, homebred artists. I'm not just talking about myself, of course, but so many other things, like in films, in books, in literature, so many things that we can appreciate more. And remember, like, I think, was it last year when the whole world made such a big hoo-ha about the Korean film industry producing a film that is worthy of an Oscar, for best writing and best movie. And I think that's important because that shows that, you know, a country outside of USA could produce award-winning art. And Malaysia, we ourselves, we can do that. It's just that we need to appreciate local talent a lot more. And once that happens, I think then a lot more people will say, ah, yeah, there is tangible worth in films. Because then when that success occurs, Malaysia's name is promoted more widely. And I think that's enough to tip the scales into Malaysians finally seeing the tangible worth of art.
I also wanted to touch on one of the disparities that the survey threw up, which is that there's a distinction here. So for respondents, non-essential doesn't actually mean that doesn't mean that it's a job that they don't want. In fact, some of those roles actually ranked highly in terms of the jobs that people want to do or want to have. What do you make of this disparity, especially as somebody who moved in some ways from one category to the other?
Oh, okay. So, I didn't read the survey in detail, but what you're essentially asking is, some jobs are essential, but they don't want to do it. Am I right?
And also, the flip side is some jobs they think are non-essential, but they want to do it.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I can totally understand that sentiment because I was in the medical field, as I always mentioned, over and over again. But having been in the medical line, I know it's celebrated now, but the reality is it is full of, especially in Malaysia, full of bureaucracy, long hours, and sometimes it can be really, really unrewarding. And that's why, speaking as a former doctor in Malaysia, that's why we see so many doctors leaving the jobs in Malaysia to go work overseas because it's just too unforgiving, you know, and it's not sustainable, especially if they want to have a family and they want to have a better work-life balance. It's just not sustainable in Malaysia. And whereas other jobs, I've met so many people who leave, you know, essential jobs to do stuff like, say, open a bakery, start an online show. Or so many examples. And I think it's due down to personal satisfaction and personal validation. All these essential jobs, they may be important, but it may be important to other people, not necessarily important to the people doing the job day in, day out.
Mm. And you actually said something earlier that I wanted to pick up on, which was this idea of, well, why did the survey even had to be done in the first place? Do you think that it's useful to categorize jobs as essential and non-essential? I think that this language is really coming out of the fact that we've been talking a lot about frontliners in the time of COVID-19, because prior to this, I don't really remember us having these sorts of conversations.
Yeah, I honestly really don't know. Like I said, what is the point of the survey, you know, like what is the value they're trying to get out of it, right? And also, I think when I first read about this survey and it came out a few days ago, I think one of the things that is a mistake is that we always tend to separate jobs like arts and science. You get what I mean? For example, like if you look at the survey, the most essential is doctor, which is, you know, pretty big in the scientific community, whereas and then arts is at the bottom. But there is, at the end of the day, if you really look into it, the separation of arts and science is on a practical and pragmatic level, it makes sense. But in essence, it doesn't make sense because arts and science are one and the same. You know, if you read all the some of the medical textbooks that I read when I was a medical student, the first page is always, there's always a quote by some luminary of the medical field, and they always say that there is art in medicine. They always say the art of medicine. They don't say the science of medicine. It is always the art of medicine. And on the flip side, artists, right? I know it's all art, but there's so many technical details when it comes to practicing your craft, practicing your art. There's a science in stand-up comedy. There's a science in graphic design. There's a science in acting. There's a science in dancing. So at the end of the day, all these, like, separating into categories like essential and non-essential, it doesn't make sense. It at the end of the day, it is not as important. It's not important at all. As the same way as when you categorize arts and science, at the end of the day, in essence, it's all the same.
And if we were to take doctors and nurses out of the equation, because I think that was, like you said, you know, whether it's before, whether it's now, always been considered a very, very important, very crucial profession. But other jobs, for example, cleaners, people who, you know, deal with garbage, not always professions and jobs that were previously valued very highly. Do you think that these changing perceptions where they're viewed as, oh, suddenly a desirable profession, do you think these perceptions are here to stay, or are they going to shift back over time as we forget what it was like to be in lockdown, for instance?
Unfortunately, I think we will forget, you know, we forget very easily. So I think, yeah, when the next crisis hits, be it financial or whatever, we are all going to forget the cleaners. And, you know, because the sad thing is most of the cleaners, at least the ones I see, are foreign workers or migrant workers. And whenever a nation goes into peril, they are the least among us, and they will be the first to be forgotten.
So earlier you talked about how difficult it was to have work-life balance as a doctor here in Malaysia, and that's something that we've mm-hmm. heard over and over again. Would you ever be compelled, you think, to return to the medical profession?
Well, that is a big no.
No that was not, easy.
not anytime soon. And the thing is because I have a lot of friends who are working as doctors in Malaysia. And man, I tell you, every time I hang out with my doctor friends, it's just me listening to them complaining about their work. Okay, about not necessarily the work per se, but the environment, right? And I know, again, right now, our KKM is lauded and applauded. They deserve all the kudos. But underlying all this is a system of bureaucracy which really, really damages and dampens the motivation of doctors in Malaysia. And we have lost so many awesome doctors to countries outside Malaysia. And it's really, really sad. I mean, I can talk a whole day about this topic, but essentially, I think doctors in Malaysia, they deserve a bit more work-life balance. They deserve to work fewer hours. They deserve to have a career ladder where they can become a specialist or consultants in a more linear and clear pathway as opposed to what is now, which is just a whole mess of bureaucracy and, you know, a very opaque system in which they accept students into specialist programs, master's programs, which is very, very sad because we are shortchanging ourselves as a nation when it comes to having the best medical talent. And you know what's so sad? Despite all this bureaucracy, despite all this damaging the psyche of doctors in Malaysia, when COVID-19 hit, our KKM was like a jewel of the nation because it rose to the occasion. All the doctors, all the frontliners, they really saved Malaysia from the brink, you know. Mm. And imagine if we had a proper, if we paid our doctors better, we treated our doctors better. Imagine if the next time something similar hits, how much better we can confront this pandemic, right? Imagine if we did not lose all the top doctors overseas. Imagine how many Dr. Noor Hisham's we would have had we have a better system of treating our doctors in Malaysia.
And I think that goes also in many ways for all the other professions, right? Because we're highlighting doctors and nurses now, and with good reason. But if you look at all the other jobs, they have traditionally not gotten the same plaudits, you know, in any way or form. And part of the conversation from the survey was also that while respondents said they wouldn't do it, they also said that they wouldn't encourage their children to do it. And that has to do as much with pay as with class and everything else. As a new dad, I suppose, I don't know if you've had time to imagine your daughter's career path. But, you know, how do you see that playing out in the future? Do you think these conversations about, you know, what job is ideal and what isn't is going to change in time?
Yes, I think what job is ideal will definitely change in time. I've already said to my wife, we have agreed that our daughter can be whatever type of millionaire she wants, whatever she wants. But okay, I love this topic about ideal jobs, right? Let me give you an example. If 20 years ago, a teenager would have asked his parent, hey, dad, I have two career pathways, okay? One is to be in oil and gas, or the other into picking up my camera and becoming a YouTuber. All I do is just upload videos on YouTube. Which of these careers I should choose? Or if we travel back in time, all the parents would have said, just stick to oil and gas. It's, you know, we always need oil and gas. That is a stable career. But now, what I see is a lot of people losing their jobs in oil and gas, and a lot of YouTubers making a lot of money. So we can. The problem with that is, if you realize, when children ask parents for career advice, parents are not experts in careers, right? Parents cannot predict the future, and parents are only at best experts in their own career, in their own profession. Not enough to advise or to paint with a brush on a blank canvas with regards to the future, what career they should choose, right? You don't know. Like, for example, say if my daughter were to ask me, Dad, should I start a career in stand-up comedy? I can advise her on stand-up comedy, but I don't know how to advise her on all the other careers, about like law, engineering, all these things. I am obtuse. I am ignorant to all this. So I think when it comes to ideal careers in the future, children or the young adults should be free to choose without parental pressure.
Jason, on that note, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Lynn.
That was Jason Leong, a stand-up comedian. Also, you know, as he mentioned, as we've mentioned, pretty well known for being a doctor previously. And we wanted Jason on to talk about the fact that we saw a survey come out from the Sunday Times, which surveyed 1,000 Singaporeans and found that the top 5 essential jobs were doctors and nurses, cleaners, garbage collectors, hawkers and delivery men. And then the bottom 5 were artists, telemarketers, PR specialists, business consultants and HR managers. If you would like to weigh in on whether or not you agree, let us know. In the meantime, we are going to be crossing over to the press conference from the Director General of Health. Here we go.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.